The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thanks for being here this morning. Well, the president tweeted out yesterday, I would be willing to shut down the government if the Democrats do not give us the votes for border security, which includes the wall, get rid of lottery. By the way, that's the immigration lottery, not the
Powerball.
Right. catch and release, and finally go to the system of immigration based on merit. We need great people coming into our country. Now, the president said, I would be willing to shut down the government. I don't know if he's going to get a bill to his desk. What we're talking about is the spending bill, which I believe the last spending bill took us to September 30th. So this means when they get back in September, this is something that they would be debating. And normally this is a last minute thing.
Right.
So is wall funding and complete wall funding or partial wall funding? I don't know by the tweet what the president is talking about specifically, whether he wants full funding for it or not. My question is, will the Republicans even put it in a bill? Do Republicans want the government shut down on October 1st?
No.
And to be shut down for 2 weeks leading in to the midterm elections. Do Republicans wish to chance it?
No.
And I'm simply asking that question in a rhetorical way. I don't have an answer. I don't know what their internal polls. I'm just saying I don't know what their internal polls are saying. Are there internal polls saying immigration is something that you can shut the government down with, or as you just put it right there, we're shutting down the government in order to get Trump's wall.
Mm-hmm.
Would that hurt the Republicans or help the Republicans?
Well,
probably in all likelihood, it would hurt the Republicans based on the polling that I've seen on the wall specifically, not on illegal immigration.
Right.
But if it was termed the wall.
And it was funding for the wall, because what does it get down to? Complete funding, really, is what the president's asking for, you know, which is, you know, depending on who you ask, what? $20-25 billion, if not more. And because while people, generally speaking, may support border enforcement, you start to split it up and numbers fall off when you start talking about the wall. And then beyond that, you start talking about the money for the wall. And that's not necessarily that doesn't necessarily mean that people are against having the wall. It's, would you shut the government? Do you think it's worth shutting the government down over this one issue? And I'm going to guess right now the Republicans don't want to take that chance, and they certainly don't want to do that 5 weeks out. You're at the end of September. You're looking at five and a half weeks from the November election.
I guess the question would be, does the president really wish to focus on this, or was it just an early Sunday morning tweet?
Right.
Now, he did say back when they passed the last spending bill that he's going to hold them to it in September. So that would be consistent with what he said back then. I didn't see any response from any Republican on that.
No. Well, and is it right now too early? think about how how all over the place we are with this current administration. How many things happen in 1 week? To put this on the table now.
Well, that's right. If you're somebody, if you're a Republican, you look at this. I'm not responding to that tweet
because,
unless you're specifically asked.
Well, and then beyond that, I mean, you think about what we have. I mean, we're moving into August here this week, and really, what are we going to be looking at? I think the number one thing is going to be the confirmation hearings,
mm-hmm.
and I think. Then beyond that, you get into, I mean, September and October is going to be full on campaigning in the districts and states. And I don't know that you want to take that on. In the Senate, there is no August break. They want to get the confirmations done. But you're going to have a number of I mean, you pretty much have to campaign at home, whether there's an August break or not. You're going to have to campaign at home. So in the Senate, there will be still the campaigning in the states, but there's going to be, of course, the in the House as well. That's constant, essentially constant campaigning. And I'm guessing they don't want to touch this issue before November. Let us focus on the win. Let us focus on what we've accomplished so far with the economy. Let's focus on the tax cuts. Let's promise
Here's a point. Is it on the president's mind because he looks at this as his last chance?
Well, because you and I talked about that.
If the Democrats by, some manner or form took back the House,
mm-hmm.
well, then this is gone.
Right.
You're not going to, at this point. The wall, you'll never see a wall during the first term.
Yeah, because I have my doubts, Trump. Even if they keep power. So is he actually looking at this saying, if there's one shot, then it's going to have to be before. Well, it's going to have to be before January.
And how far is he willing to go? I was just thinking of the hypothetical scenarios that, mm-hmm. So Congress passes it, the House passes it, the Senate passes the spending bill, and there's no wall funding. And the president says, okay, I'm vetoing it. Mm-hmm. And then we will note every Republican that crosses the line, that because the Democrats in all likelihood, would at that point agree, that they wanted the bill passed.
Right.
Because they'd make some kind of compromise in spending. And then you get, at that point, you would get. So what do? All Republicans vote in it the first time? So if it was a second vote, that's what you would do. You would have the veto-proof bill by the time it goes to the president.
Yeah, I think so.
So you don't have to have a second vote after the president veto it.
Right.
Or if you did, I'm not sure what the what happens at that point. I don't think you need at that point if you have the 2/3 majority at that point. I don't know if you have to go back and vote again. I don't think you do. If you get that veto-proof majority
right.
on the first vote.
Right.
Because that would be the way to avoid the confrontation.
Yeah, it would be, if it's inevitable even.
Yeah.
But I don't think the president would have any choice but at that point to sign it.
But does he view this as his last chance?
Well...
Because if you don't get something in your first 2 years, even mm-hmm. if they hold on to the House. Because if they hold on to the House, let's say they hold on to the House and they do better than they thought they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gain seats in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the Republican leadership, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it depends who the Republican, whether it's, Kevin McCarthy or whether Jim Jordan gets it, whether it's a more moderate or more conservative would lead them in a particular direction. So again, this is all hypothetical, depending on what would happen, after Ryan is gone. But you would have a significant portion of Republicans who would say, why do we need to face the wall thing when we got through 2 years and we still have the House and we still have the Senate?
Right.
What is the urgency at this point to get full funding for the wall when it's the one thing in immigration that doesn't have the 70, 75, 80% approval rating, as all the other things do, when it comes to illegal immigration, things like the anti-sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at merit-based, all things like that, when it comes to immigration, the vast majority of the public, the polls don't read as high on the wall specifically.
Right. Could you even see them saying, okay, look, after the election, we'll piecemeal it. We'll get you $5 billion here, $5 billion there as we go along through spending bills because we're going to be safe at least for another 2 years. And I don't know because I don't know what could be in terms of the funding, each of that, you know, that batch of funding, each batch of funding essentially could, you know, fund 1 year worth of construction, 2 years worth of construction.
Mr. President, could you call it just border security and drop the wall?
Right.
Just don't say the wall.
Mm-hmm. Because if you
just
say border security.
Just say border security.
Right.
And that will include a barrier fence.
Right.
Just drop the word and we'll give you the money.
Well, the problem
is, it's the word that offends people,
well,
not the actual border security or putting in a barrier. You just can't call it a wall.
Well, if we move in that direction and we do it and we piecemeal it out, then in 2020 you can come back and point to it and say, we got it.
Right.
Because politically, that's what the president's looking to do, deliver a promise. Part of it. In this case, Mexico didn't pay for it, but it's still the wall. So if you're looking to deliver a campaign promise, there's probably a deal to be made in that way, but that deal relies heavily on those Republicans winning in the fall. But then I could see Republicans putting it on the president, then help us campaign.
Yep.
And let's focus on the accomplishments so far and promise more of the same, more deregulation, more pro-business type, you know, growth and economic prosperity. I think you could probably get out in the campaign trail and really do some good.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tires are one of the largest operating costs for owner-operators and fleets alike, but retreading gives you the opportunity to reuse your existing or old tires and save money. You can save anywhere from 30% to 50% per tire by retreading, provided that your casings are properly maintained. Maintaining proper inflation levels is one of the most important things you can do in order to preserve the durability of your tire casing. Underinflation causes a tire to flex as it rolls down the highway, resulting in internal heat buildup. In order to keep your tires properly inflated, add a tire pressure check to your pre-trip inspection. Ensuring that your tires are properly inflated will help maintain their integrity and will allow you to use them for multiple retreads, saving you money. Visit a TA truck service location near you to ensure that your tires are properly inflated and maintained.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Gary in New York City. Gary, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. I may be late to this party on this question, but seems to me that we have actual law breaking on the Democratic side. It's manifest. So why doesn't anyone challenge Rosenstein, since he's in control, to investigate the actual crimes in this case? In other words, why is Trump being investigated for non-criminal acts, but Hillary is not being investigated for known and demonstrable criminal acts? And you can compare the two. You have you had Hillary proactively seeking illegally paid for and illegally used Russian dirt through the Steele dossier.
Right.
He had connections to the Kremlin. But Eric Trump passively expressed interest in dirt when it was offered, but ultimately did not pay or receive any dirt.
Well, Gary, you're not late to the party. Now, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Rosenstein knows that Mueller is looking into that. That's the question that we've had all along, and we looked at this not from a political partisan point of view, but strictly an investigator point of view when Mueller was appointed. So Mueller's appointed day one, and he's supposed to look to see whether Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. Where would that best evidence exist? Because that's what Congress, the best evidence would exist in the FISA warrant, because the FBI had the evidence that they got you have to have good evidence. The best evidence has to be what you got in order to spy on Carter Page. So you would be going through that, and then by doing that, you would take it in the direction of, you know, whether the information was legit one way, but the other way you'd be going back all the way through to find out where the information came from. And as Mueller would take him all the way back through the Russians, through Christopher Steele, through Fusion GPS, through Perkins Coie, the law firm, right to Hillary and the DNC. And so we don't know if he did that, and that would be the question when he comes out with his report, whether he did that, and if he did not do that, why did he not do that? Because that seems to be the way that an investigation would lead you if you were looking at it from the eyes of an investigator.
I understand that. But from the very beginning, his mandate was to investigate potential crimes, not potential Trump crimes. And all this time, it's been leaking out. I think it comes from the DOJ. In other words, why wasn't a news story all this week been the sole? Why was a news story all this week been that the sole reason we know about the Trump Towers meeting is from the illegally obtained FISA surveillance, which was illegally leaked to the public?
Well,
and when I say illegally obtained, what I mean is that it was through false sworn affidavits by Lynch, Comey, I think, Rosenstein at least once, and illegally used. Also, since it was illegally used information obtained from FISA warrants.
Okay, the law breaking, there's a possible law breaking there, but the actual, you know, the specific law breaking, we don't know because we don't know what was in there.
Right.
We still don't know everything, so you can make that assumption, but we do know that the only collusion, and by the way, the mandate was to look at the Trump campaign.
Right.
And Russian collusion. You said it was focused on that and any other crimes that might come off on that, which then at that point you take that edict and you follow it around and you have to look at it and say, well, if you're looking for collusion, the only collusion we found was the Hillary campaign and the DNC, who colluded indirectly through Perkins Coie, through Fusion GPS, through Christopher Steele, who got the dirt from the Russians in order to change the outcome of the election by having unverified stuff on Trump.
Right.
Right.
I mean, if you have a special counsel that's assigned to the Trump side of it, and this is to, you know, to the caller Gary's point, then how is it you don't at least have some kind of investigation? Now, we don't know that Mueller isn't looking at that side of it. So far, there's been nothing in regards to any leak or any indictment related to the DNC or the Hillary campaign or anything there. But we do go back to, again, the validity of the FISA warrant for Carter Page. And going back to the dossier, this is why this warrant application being released was so important and why it's so important to see the redacted part of that, which is what Devin Nunes is trying to get done now. And those are the questions that have yet to be answered, because, you know, it's at that point now where you're going to have to look at that. Because I guarantee you, based on that, I know that Mueller has seen the unredacted version of that application.
You would think. I don't know if he has access to that or not. I would assume he would.
I would think so if you're going to look and pursue charges on it.
Thank you.
And the drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Yeah, so to our last caller, again, those were all things you said. You were wondering whether you were late to the party, and you weren't. It's something that we have asked all along, and a lot of it we don't know. We don't know where Robert Mueller is going, but we have talked about it many times that as from an investigative point of view, if you're looking at it strictly as an investigator and not a partisan, what direction would it take you to? What would be one of the first things that you would be looking for? Well, one of the first things you'd be looking for, if you were told that your mission, if you decide to accept it, okay, I got that on my mind.
Yeah.
But your mission is to find out if the Trump campaign colluded, anybody in the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians, because that's what it was, colluded. Not necessarily a crime, colluded.
Mm-hmm.
Or any other crimes that come as a result of it. So if you're looking for collusion, which we always thought was interesting and was wrong, that's why we thought a special prosecutor was wrong, because if the government or Congress or the Justice Department cannot identify a specific crime, then you shouldn't have a special prosecutor. What would the Right. possible crime be? What is the specific allegation of what you did? Never appeared. That's why we thought it was wrong in the first place to have a special prosecutor. But if you take the job and you're going to lead the investigation and you're looking for evidence, well, what's the best evidence that you can get from the point of starting day one? Okay, the FBI has been investigating him. We all know the FBI has been investigating the Trump campaign. Not Trump specifically. They knew that. Mueller knew that when he started. And as recently as, what, 2 months ago?
Right.
The Mueller told Trump's lawyers he's not a target of the investigation. It was about 2 months ago, right? Two and a half months ago.
Right.
And so what do? You go to the FBI to see what evidence they have, right? You're the special prosecutor. You're privy to everything that the FBI has. Well, where did the FBI go? The FBI went right to the FISA court with all the evidence they had. And the evidence that they had was based on the fear and the suspicion that Carter Page colluded with the Russians and somebody else higher up in the Trump campaign to change the outcome of the election.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you'd want all the information on that, wouldn't you? Which would then lead you to what? The Steele dossier. Well, where did the Steele dossier come from? You're Mueller, right? This yep. is the allegation against Trump.
Right.
Well, okay, Christopher Steele, you interview him. Okay, here's where it came from. Well, by the way, why did you do this investigation? Oh, okay, I was paid by Fusion, part of Fusion GPS. I'm paid by them. Okay, mm-hmm. let's go to Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS, who hired you? Well, we got the money from Perkins Coie, the law firm. Perkins Coie gave it to us. Okay, then you Mueller goes to Perkins Coie. All right, where'd you get the money from? Hillary and the DNC.
Yeah.
Oh. Collusion with the Russians.
Well, I mean, that's what you have here. Because if you look at the, now the story being the Trump meeting, the Trump Jr. meeting with the Russian lawyer.
Yep.
If you look at Veselnitskaya, this is the Russian lawyer sitting down with Trump Jr. Now, at some point, he was told this is going to be about getting dirt on Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
All right. By the way, which isn't illegal. It's done all the time. We'll point to the proof that you just pointed out, Gary. That's what was that? Is anyone on the left even denying the whether you believe it's true or not, the information, the content of it, is aside the point. What was the design of the Steele dossier? To bring dirt on Trump.
To take him down. And then
what was the point of the meeting for Trump Jr. to sit down with a Russian lawyer because the story goes he had been told there was some dirt on Hillary.
To take her down.
Right. It's done all the time. Not against the law.
Well, as we said, when you take from the Russians to Christopher Steele all the way back, I haven't been able to identify its collusion. The only crime we can identify is the campaign finance violation of the money being filtered and going to a foreign national.
Yes.
Which would be a campaign election violation. Mm-hmm. But even originally with Trump, though, it was looking for collusion.
Right.
Not necessarily lawbreaking. That was why we thought it was wrong to have a special counsel to begin with, and any crimes that might come from that. Mm-hmm. We said, well, if you don't have a crime, you shouldn't have a special counsel.
Right.
But when you look for collusion, the only place you can find it is there. But I'm so glad you brought up the meeting, because that was being talked again on CNBC over the weekend. I want to play this audio cut. This is from last night on Cassie DC on Sunday evening. And they had on Alan Dershowitz and MSNBC legal analyst Mimi Rocha on there. And listen to this back and forth. We start with Mimi Rocha talking about how the Trump story has changed and then making what Dershowitz believes is allegations against him. He is not happy. Okay, can we play this audio here?
All right,
okay, here we go.
Mr. Dershowitz's initial argument now, how far we've come. Originally, Trump's defense was there was no meeting. Then it was there was a meeting, but they only talked about adoptions. Then it was Trump didn't know about the meeting. Now it appears we've gotten to the point where it's Trump may know about it, but no crime was committed. And, you know, I think that in and of itself, the sort of path of this defense by Trump's team is telling. But I also think we can't look at this meeting in isolation. It is very significant, if true, that he knew about the meeting. And that doesn't mean that a crime begins and ends there. You have to look at everything that came before it and everything that came after it. Remember, after that meeting is when Trump gave that speech calling on the Russians to get more of Hillary Clinton's emails. And they actually did, we know, go in then and start phishing into her campaign directly.
Basically right away, the day after.
Yes.
Let me
so
answer
you
that,
can't
please.
Look at it in isolation.
Let
Mr.
me
Dershowitz?
Answer that, please. You are implying in a kind of McCarthyite way that I am somehow defending Trump and that I am making
insult,
his
sir.
Case. Shame on you. I am making a civil liberties case. I am not part of the Trump defense team. And
don't
you dare accuse me of doing that. I am not making a case for anybody. I would be making the identical case if Hillary Clinton had been elected and they were trying to stretch the law the way all four of you are trying to stretch the law to target somebody who
Sir,
you disapprove
nobody's stretching
of.
The law here.
I am
nobody
the
is,
only person on this show who is trying
is
to defend civil liberties. Give me at least an opportunity to make that case, and don't accuse me of making a case for somebody
I'm not
accusing. Making a case. I'm not responsible for what Trump said earlier. I'm not responsible for what he says now.
But
I'm
you are
telling
defending
you what
him,
the law
sir.
Is.
You are defending
and
him,
I'm telling
and to
you,
her
I'm
point,
not defending
the president's
him.
Story has
I
changed repeatedly.
Defending him. I am defending civil liberties and a narrow construction
no,
of the law.
You're defending him in the
and
name
I
can, of civil
I
liberties.
Am defending the concept of lenity, and I have to tell you, if the evidence were to
All
point
right.
to crime, whether it be of Hillary Clinton or of Donald Trump or of you, I would make that case, but I'm not going to allow the
well,
law to be
right.
stretched.
We'll have to take-
so there you go. Mm. And they didn't want it. And it's like, you know, no, you're defending him. He's like, I'm not defending him. I'm defending the law.
Right.
What does the law say? I'm
exactly.
not defending him.
But you can't do that anymore.
No, you can't.
No, Mr. Dershowitz, you can't because the left won't allow you to do that. When the law works in the name or in favor, rather, of Donald Trump or anybody associated with Donald Trump, when the law protects them, we can't have that.
Look, we just went through the whole thing with, you know, the collusion with Hillary Clinton. And when we said, look, we don't know where any law breaking is except the campaign violation for the foreign national getting the money. You can look for dirt on another candidate. You can lie about looking for dirt for another candidate unless you're under oath.
Right.
It's what is the crime? And they know that. She knows it. Mimi Rocha knows it. She's a, you know, a former prosecutor. She know you're looking for the crime. If you're under oath, yeah. If you're under oath and lie about something that's not a crime, that's perjury.
Right.
But the fact is, as he has said all along, I'm looking at the law. Where is the law? The funny thing is, it's almost as if the, and this is why I believe they're being disingenuous, especially Mimi Rocha, because she understands what the law is, and she understands that there is no law against a campaign getting dirt about somebody else's campaign
right.
and using that dirt against them. It may be immoral. It may be wrong. You could make yourself vulnerable, especially if you're dealing with the foreign government somehow.
Yeah, Hillary. But you could even lose the election.
Well, yeah, you can even lose the election. But the fact is, we know nobody's screaming that Hillary Clinton and Christopher Steele broke the law.
No.
And Christopher Steele says he got the information from people inside the Kremlin.
Right.
So, I mean, it gets to the point of being ridiculous. Are you doing the same minutia analysis, Mimi Rocha and Cassie D.C., whoever Cassie D.C. is? Are you doing the same analysis on Hillary Clinton and the DNC filtering the money to collude with the Russians in order to change the outcome of the election
right.
by having unverified, salacious dirt against Donald Trump to attempt to destroy his campaign? And then when you couldn't do that, destroy the legitimacy of a duly elected president. Still, there may be nothing illegal there, but it's immoral. Our point is, cover both the same way.
Are you applying your standards to both?
Yes.
The answer is no. They are
or the not. Legal standard to both.
Right.
No. You're not even mentioning the one.
No, you're not.
Doesn't even exist.
Because when the legal standard favors the president, we can't have that. As Alan Dershowitz just demonstrated
right.
for us.
He said, I'm defending the law, not Trump.
Not part of his
team.
Like,
and they're like, no, you're defending him.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Wow. That's where I saw the bias.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is defending the law. He's not defending Trump by stating that I know Trump committed a crime, but I'm defending him to try to get him out of it. That's what, when a prosecutor, and she said that, when an ex-prosecutor says that to another attorney, that's what they mean. Oh, you know he's guilty of a crime. You're just defending him.
Right.
No, I'm defending the law. He didn't commit a crime. We all know the facts. We're agreeing on the facts here. Even if we agree on the facts, there is no crime. So that's where the left is right now. You just saw it right there. You just heard it right there. I saw it.
Yeah. But it is. That's you absolutely. There's no way to state the law at all as honest as you think you are. There's no way, as Alan Dershowitz just learned, to actually cite the law, defend the law, if it favors Donald Trump.
Nope. Can't do it.
Can't do that anymore.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in September when they actually vote on a spending bill and whether the wall will be a part of it or not.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, you get that close to the wire in terms of the midterm, and I think right now the president would likely himself. Like to hold on to that, you know, I guess every advantage that you can get going into the meeting.
If you see the polls, for example, on open borders, vast majority of Americans are against open borders. They want border security. But polling for the wall specifically, when you use the term the wall, is not as great.
Right. It starts to drop off.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you know, you could, again, go after it if, look, Mr. President, help us campaign, and then we'll see if we can tackle this on the other side of the election. But we'll see.
It was just a tweet by the president. I don't know how serious he is, except for the fact that he brought it up after the last spending bill,
right,
that he will stand his ground come September.
Yeah. Well, can you do that when you've got no support otherwise? You're going to need the support of your party to get that done. We'll see if that happens.
And that's really the great question, Mark. Does he have the support of the party to do it at that point?
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Never mind. I was going to say in the news today, and never mind. The story goes nowhere. I'm sorry, but I saw the headline, and it said that Americans for Prosperity, the network backed by Charles Koch of the Koch brothers, said that they'd be happy to back Democrats. Like, well, wait a minute. What? I mean, someday I'll actually be able to say to a Democrat, the evil Koch brothers. I mean, I actually be able to say, and I went, oh, wait a minute. Huh? We're happy to back Democrats who are pro-growth. So that really eliminates Democrats. So,
well, they are pro-growth. Pro-government growth.
I think he means pro-economic growth.
Oh. Well, who wants that?
Yeah. So never mind. There's nothing here to this story.
Nothing to see here, folks.
He said, if you're a Democrat and stand up to Senator Elizabeth Warren to corral enough votes for financial reform that breaks barriers for community banks and families, you're darn right we'll work with you.
You're darn right.
I know this is uncomfortable.
What?
said Emily Seidel, the CEO of Americans for Prosperity, Koch's lobby. I know this is uncomfortable. Seidel told a group of donors and at least two GOP lawmakers who were sitting in the crowd. Koch network officials estimate there are approximately 500 donors attending this year's conference. If you're a Democrat and you stand up to Elizabeth Warren, we'll work with you.
All right.
Seidel then gave a stern warning to Republicans who voted for a $1.3 trillion spending bill that was passed in March. If you're a Republican who sits on the committee that wrote the worst spending bill in our country's history and you voted for it, you're darn right we'll hold you accountable. Two Republicans who voted for the spending package, Senator Tim Scott of Florida and Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia, were in attendance. So what she's saying is, what the Koch brothers are saying is, if you're not going to be a fiscal conservative, we're going to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
And if you're a Democrat who is a fiscal conservative,
good luck.
Excuse me here.
He might as well have said, listen, we will back Hillary if she endorses Trump for re-election in 2020. I mean, if we're going to make pigs fly, let's just go full on, shall we?
Well, I'm trying to think. Who do you possibly stand a chance in the Democrats? Maybe a Manchin?
Yeah, maybe. And seriously,
are we done? Is there anybody else on the list?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Webb used to be, but I mean, you know, what's the use? Yeah, no, it's not.
So let's put it this way. The Koch brothers are not going to be supporting or funding very many Democrats.
I'm just guessing this statement might have come after some kind of wine tasting event. I'm just guessing.
Well, maybe what they're doing is the money's out there if you want it.
Hey, we got plenty of money.
The money out there.
Here's what you have to do to sell your soul.
The Koch brothers, not relevant anymore. Yeah. They're looking for fiscal conservatives anywhere in Congress.
Yes. I think Charlie Daniels wrote that song, didn't he? About the Koch brothers going down to Georgia or something. But the whole idea, you know, is really just goes nowhere because that's not going to happen. Look, the Democrats can't even be a liberal protester right now because you're going to be in the way of tomorrow's liberal protester. You're part of the problem. See, the problem is I'm going to be here tomorrow and you're yesterday's news tomorrow. Today you're not, but tomorrow you are. And that's, you know, we were talking about the liberal comedian. She has a Netflix special, and she's protesting herself. She hates her own comedy so much she wants to quit.
Wow. She's a victim and an oppressor.
Yes. All in one. We warned you.
So she is, I didn't think it was going to get to this point so soon, that the individual
yes
can be a victim, can be an oppressor.
All in one. And a victim.
Can be an oppressor of the victim.
Oh, yeah.
You can be the oppressor of the victim in yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Hannah Gatsby.
That takes quite a mind.
She's got a Netflix special on right now, and at the beginning of the special, I haven't seen it yet. It came up on my queue on Netflix the other day. I didn't watch it because I viewed the description that she wants to quit comedy. Now, she's saying, and she was on Jimmy Fallon last week, saying that, you know, part of the problem is, and here's a quote from her, "Do you understand what self-deprecation means from somebody who already exists in the margins?"
Yes.
Thank you, big guy. And to finish the quote, "It's not humility, it's humiliation." She's blaming herself for her own oppression.
So her self-deprecating humor is actually oppression against the victim, which is a part of her.
Yeah.
So she's playing both roles. So she's going to stop doing...
Well, now she announced the other night that she's not going to.
Oh,
she announced
so now
in the special... She's going to end her comedy career.
Well, what happened to the oppressor then?
I don't know.
So the oppressor wins because when you have a Netflix special and you have a Jimmy, then you're on with Jimmy Fallon,
yeah,
means that you've drawn quite a bit of an audience, which means the next tour could go very well. So it's okay to be the oppressor. You push away the victim side of yourself when the oppressor can make money off
yes.
the victim.
Well, I first learned of Hannah Gatsby as this story came up, because I didn't know who she was. She's Australian. When she talks about being marginalized, she already exists in the margins. She's a lesbian. I don't know if I mentioned that or not. But what she's saying basically is I'm being marginalized. Well, by who?
Herself.
Because the way I'm measuring it is that I'm not very familiar with you, but you have your own Netflix stand-up special. And you also appeared on Jimmy Fallon. I'm not sure where the marginalization is coming from, but why would you care about what anybody else thinks of your lifestyle, you seem to be doing very well.
What I always find interesting is those on the left seem to marginalize themselves.
And this is it.
They marginalize themselves. We're in the margins. We're marginalized. I'm not marginalizing.
I'm not marginalizing.
Are you marginalizing her? No, I'm not. Are you? No, I'm not.
No.
Who's marginalized? Oh, she's marginalizing herself. But then again, she admitted that she was because she was going to quit because her self-deprecating humor was actually
humiliating.
Humiliating humor. And so the oppressor in her needed to stop oppressing the victim in her. So she was going to quit comedy, but now she's decided that the oppressor isn't as bad as she thought, apparently. I don't know.
Right now, she's standing outside her own house with a protest sign. I don't know who she expects to appeal to or if anybody's going to come outside from the house.
After this story, I only have to say one thing. We're doomed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're doomed.
We're doomed.
We're doomed.
And we did mention that Fox story yesterday that talked about the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
Is actually on both sides. Trump supporters and Trump opposers.
Yeah, right.
Trump opposers, I like that. Those who oppose Donald Trump that on both sides they believe that the world is going to end. I'm not kidding. This story appeared on Fox,
right? Yeah,
Fox News Insider yesterday, and we started off the show with it. We started off the show with a "We're Doomed" update because they're trying to convince us that everybody believes that we're doomed and that the world's going to end. What a load of horse! Oh, I can't say that.
Yeah, I mean this is the actual people saying we're doomed. I'm saying society's doomed. Now listen. I'm Elon Musk and Richard Branson have given me permission to be on either of their spacecrafts. I don't know if I want to be in the convertible, though. That to me, I'm guessing, is going to be a little harsh. And you know, when you take off, you know, the launch, I'm guessing, is going to be a little hot. But I'm going to get off this planet through one of those billionaires. And I'm thinking it's going to be Musk, because if he's already gotten enough of my taxpayer money to fund it, I'm kind of owed a ticket, if you will. So you people are doomed. I'm not doomed, but in this society where I'll tell you who's doomed, the far left. Please keep it up.
Well, we talked about identity politics fighting with each other. We talked about the lesbian group. In Great Britain that wishes to have the L taking off.
Right.
The LGBT.
Right.
Because the T is on there and they do not view that men can be women.
Right.
And so the huge fight is. Now, that was one group fighting against another group. And we know that people and groups that were victims yesterday can be oppressors tomorrow. But this comedian is the first one that I've seen that they're self-oppressed.
Yes.
That she is a victim of the side of her personality or mind that is the oppressor, and she has to quit her profession or tried to convince people she had to quit her profession because she was self-oppressed.
Right.
Oh, it gets so tiring. I mean, it's entertaining at first, and then it gets tiring really quick. I was very entertained by it for the first couple of minutes.
Well, because the loop is getting much smaller.
Yeah, this is really stupid.
The loop is much smaller now. See, the protest line exists because of her, but it also exists because of her. That's it. It just depends on which her you're talking about. The half that hates her other half or the other half that hates her other half. And we don't know. I don't know what the sign reads.
So she's a trans.
Yeah, be careful. This is like time travel. I got to be careful.
Yes. She's a.
Yeah.
She's a.
Don't cross the streams.
Well, no, she's a trans oppressor
mm-hmm.
victim. You float in between.
Yes.
I'm being serious.
No,
I'm
no, not no, that's kidding. How you would describe it in today's world, yes.
I'm being serious from the way that they claim, you know, what their labels are. And if she's having this fight that one part of her is the oppressor and the other part of her is a victim, that's the next thing I expect to hear is, well, that's part of the trans floating between an oppressor and a victim
right.
of oneself.
Yeah.
Man.
Yep.
I really do. I don't mean to say this because I know some people, you know, are... you know, have an addiction problem, but I need a drink.
Well, I'll say this, too, that where do you go from here?
I don't know.
If you can't stand yourself, if you can't, at that point, you're saying, I can't live with the work I do, therefore I'm going to quit. No, wait, I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, at least I'm not her problem.
Oh, yeah.
At least she's not blaming
you're
me.
You're way down on the list.
Yeah.
Down there with climate change.
866-90-RED-EYE.
That agreement between President Trump and European Union President Juncker has set up a framework for future trade discussions. U.S. Trade Ambassador Robert Lighthizer told a Senate panel that the U.S. and EU agreed
that we would set up basically one group to deal with the process of getting to zero on tariffs and zero on subsidies, and another group to deal with this rather complicated issue of getting standards to the point where hopefully there's some equivalency and we remove standards.
The U.S. and EU have very different standards on food safety, GMOs, and the use of hormones in beef production. Lighthizer says, though, the U.S. is not wasting any time on setting up these groups and a structure for discussion.
We have in the U.S. to already kind of allocated resources and are expected to be moving forward.
He said the two sides are not starting cold on this. There were already negotiations and some agreements on some issues when the EU and U.S. were actively working on the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, TTIP for short. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, just a little bit of what Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott said about the national anthem late last week. Breaking news sort of overnight. The NFL has told Jerry Jones to shut up.
Yeah. And apparently owners as well.
All the other owners as
Don't
well.
Don't talk about it.
Right. He's the only one really, though, talking about it to that extent. I know that the Atlanta owner spoke up a little bit about it in the last couple of days, but Jerry has been the story. And what happened was a number of local sports hosts, TV hosts, were, you know, going to be doing their first Sunday evening, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, interviews with him. And they all stated afterwards that they couldn't talk about the anthem because the NFL has told all the owners, nope. Mm-hmm. So you won't hear any more from Jerry Jones again, who has said, as we brought you last week, that every Cowboy must stand for the anthem with toe on the line.
Mm-hmm. You had, Dak Prescott and also Ezekiel Elliott, basically the same thing. Look, time and place for everything. This is where the game is. You know, and that's the way it's always been. This isn't the first time you've had politically active professional athletes.
No.
That's been going on for a long time.
Yes.
You know, when you make a part of the presentation, now you're drawing that kind of attention to the game. And there are people that might agree with the cause, but can disagree with where you should protest.
Mm-hmm.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
There's a big ridge in the upper steering winds, the jet stream, that will continue to push hot air into the west. California, the northern, central, and southern Rockies, and the desert southwest will be baking again today. But a trough in the jet stream begins just to the east of the Rockies, so we'll see some cooler temperatures today as a result in places like Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Alabama, and cooler overall for the northern and central plains as well as the Midwest. At the surface, we have some unsettled weather right in around the Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska region, where we'll see some thunderstorms fire up today and tomorrow, which have the potential of becoming some severe weather, producing primarily hail and dangerous lightning. A good portion of the south will be soggy today, especially the Gulf Coast, from Texas over to Florida, and from Florida's eastern coast up through at least North Carolina. Not too far off from a typical summer forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Anytime, 24 hours a day, say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Reading this headline here, shocked by this. Trump calls the FBI ugly. Oh, I'm sorry, I read it wrong. Trump calls the FBI building ugly.
Oh, okay.
Wants to oversee a revamp effort.
Wait a minute. It's a government building. They're kind of all ugly, aren't they? I mean, you know, not including the White House, but many of the government office buildings are just, well, ugly.
Yes. He reportedly told Chief of Staff John Kelly that he wants to get involved in whatever construction project may happen, and he opposes moving the FBI out of Washington because it is located on prime real estate. POTUS is always interested in building because he knows it better than anyone and has been very successful on it.
Okay, my question would be, are we talking about creating a greater efficiency in the Bureau? You know, otherwise, I don't know that we need to spend more money on making it pretty.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the article doesn't give us a lot of details.
Now, he does want to put Trump's FBI on it, you know, because he just wants to put his name on it, but has a heliport on top.
So far, he's against the suggested name, the Comey Building.
That's right. James Comey Building. Yeah. Yeah.
Very quickly, we had talked about the president and his tweet where he said, I would be willing to shut down government if the Democrats do not give us the votes for border security, which includes the wall. Interesting, because the first thing that came up, I said, well, would you be willing to shut down the government if Republicans don't give you a bill and don't include that in the bill?
Mm.
I say that because the Daily Caller reporting that during I wonder if this is one of the reasons the president tweeted that out on Sunday, because on Friday, in an interview, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the wall on the U.S. border will likely not make it into the next funding legislation.
Right.
When asked directly if the funding of the border would have to wait until after the midterm elections, the Republican senator replied, probably, noting that it is something Democrats and Republicans do have a disagreement on, but most of the government will be covered. And then at the end of the year, if we can't reach an agreement on that, we'll do what's called a continuing resolution for that little portion of the government spending that's left unpassed in individual bills, McConnell added. McConnell and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan met with Trump last Wednesday to discuss the funding legislation. The following day, Ryan also indicated the wall funding looked unlikely to be included in the current legislation. The president's willing to be patient to make sure we get what we need so we can get that done. But he further stated that funding the border wall was not a question of if, it's a question of when.
All right.
And so 2 days later, the president comes out, I'll be willing to shut down the government. The Democrats do not give us votes for border security. Does that mean September or sometime in the future?
Well, because what would be the promise behind closed doors if Republicans want to go to the White House and basically try and make a deal and say, hey, we really want, it's not polling well when we, it, border security does, but the wall itself doesn't poll very well. Let's get this out of the way and off the table before November. We'll do you know, a CR as long as we need to, a continuing resolution if we need to. But let's campaign together on the positives of the things we've achieved so far and how the economy is going, assuming the third quarter does well. It is something I think they have to focus on. Don't stray on anything that's going to distract at the moment.
Well, one wonders why, if they had the meeting and McConnell and Ryan told the president,
don't have the votes,
not going to happen, we're not going to bring it up. The president on Sunday, you know, says I would be willing to shut down the government.
Yeah.
Because then you bring it back, you bring that, then it's the mindset of a significant portion of the Republican Party saying, okay, Trump's there for the wall, and saying the Democrats don't give us the votes. Well, if the Republicans don't even put it in the bill because they don't believe they have the votes, then where do you go with it? Are the Republicans going to put it in the bill and have a vote on that first before they redo it in September? Just wondering what the plan is.
Yeah.
Because, again, and unless the president just in his mind wants to keep that out there, that it will get done eventually, just not in September. And the reason I brought it up, because I said earlier, I said the president, I believe, is referring to September, because that's what he said after the last spending bill, that we're not going to let this happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Right.
Next time we get the wall. This isn't going to happen again. I'm not going to sign it again. Well, he was told last Wednesday by Republican leaders, probably not going to happen.
Well, and if you look at what McConnell is saying, according to the Daily Caller, basically when asked if it would, you know, they would wait until after the midterms to look for this, and he's saying probably, that's, again, that logic, let's not put this on the table, let's not make this an issue if it doesn't have to be right now. We can let's focus on keeping our seats in the House and Senate.
Oh yeah, I know what they're doing. I know what they're doing. I'm just not sure what the president's doing.
Well, if he's willing, the question is he willing to deal with Republicans on that? Does he see the same as they see on their polls?
Yeah, they don't say what the president said in that meeting. Did the president say no, we have the wall?
Well, and it seems like his tweet is kind of that reaction. That's that answer to that, but a tweet doesn't mean anything, as we have learned. It's whether or not he's willing to put up that fight in September.
Right. All right, I want to play this audio cut from Dak Prescott from Friday, when he was asked if he's was affected by his team's policy of standing during the national anthem, and about what Jerry Jones and his son also said, that you stand on the line now, as we've been told from last night, the NFL has told Jerry and the other owners, stop talking. Shut up. Don't bring it up. And one wonders, and you and I have talked about it, the first game is this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And will they have some type of policy? And what in the world kind of policy would then satisfy a Jerry Jones who wanted to go beyond what the NFL was doing? Which was, nope, sorry, you don't sit in the tunnel, you don't sit in the locker room. Everybody's out toeing the line. Here's Dak Prescott's response to the reporter's question about how he is affected by what Jerry Jones said.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily listen to it. It has no effect to me because I do exactly what I'm doing and what I've said and what I stand by, whether I was wearing the star or not, whether I was playing for Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, or any other owner. I believe in what I believe in, and that's that.
Is that what is that in terms of the anthem? I mean, does that mean that
I'm
never protest?
No, I never protest. I never protest during the anthem, and I don't think that's the time or the venue to do so. The game of football has always brought me such a peace, and I think it does the same for a lot of people. A lot of people playing the game, a lot of people watching the game, a lot of people that have any impact of the game. So when you bring such a controversy to the stadium, to the field, to the game, it takes away. It takes away from that. It takes away from the joy and to the love that football brings a lot of people. And so for me, I'm all about making a change and making a difference. And I think this whole kneeling and all that was all about just raising awareness, and the fact that we're still talking about social injustice years later, I think we've got to that point. I think we've proved and we know that the social injustice. So I'm up for taking a next step, that whatever that step may be, for action and not just kneeling. I've always believed standing up for what I believe in, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
There you go.
That's not enough. What I want all the NFL players to agree with me on every issue.
Or maybe we'll have a protest of a player protesting themselves.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Well, I don't know. Look at the trend.
I know.
You know, we had the comedian.
Yes.
Protesting. And then we had the guy, one of the first people on board at Facebook. He was outraged that in 3 years he made nearly $500 million. How dare I make that kind of, this is what's, I'm what's wrong with the world. It makes it a lot simpler, I guess. You don't have to go very far to protest, do you? If that's the case, you really don't even have to get out of bed.
This one, from newsbusters.org, who found this, from the Liberals Spoil Everything Department, where everything is a problem. This from Vice writer Harry Cheadle. Celebrate the 40th anniversary of Animal House by tossing it in the trash. Drunken frat boys don't seem so charming anymore, and the film's gender politics... Wow.
Yeah.
Are, I can't say it, blanked beyond repair.
Okay.
All right.
So there you go. From his 2018 perch, Cheadle tears into the offensive, vulgar, and extremely hilarious college comedy hit for its lack of wokeness. You know something? You think about this, and I think I can make this statement, and most people would agree. John Belushi wasn't woke.
Can you imagine traveling back in time?
John, are you woke?
Yeah. 1976, just, you know, land in your time machine. You just show up. Hey, John. Are you woke?
I'm thinking, have you seen the documentaries, you know, on Animal House? And I think it's John Landis who's, you know, talking to, it's out where they have the parade scene, you know, and you can tell, and he's talking to John about a whole bunch of different things.
Right.
And that just popped into my mind. I could have seen Landis looking at him saying, John, are you woke?
Well, could you imagine breaking it down with all the concerns just issued there in that article to John Belushi back in the day when they were making the movie? Our problem is that the gender politics of the script aren't working.
What?
What? I'm going to lunch. When you people sober up, I'll be back.
Now, didn't before they were allowed to release it, the movie execs, they didn't like the club scene. Didn't Richard Pryor, I believe Richard Pryor, they had him watch it. They wanted Richard Pryor's approval. Otherwise, they didn't want that, you know, the club scene in there.
Right, right.
Do you mind if we dance with your dates?
Right.
And from what I remember, Richard Pryor said, yeah, release it. White people are crazy.
Exactly. Well, you know, him and another movie from that era, Blazing Saddles.
Oh. Oh.
That came up on the queue. I don't know if it was Netflix or Amazon somewhere the other day. And I just thought to myself, There's no way. There's no way in 2018 you'd make that movie. And keep in mind, one of the writers was Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And they, at some point, they had considered him for the lead where Cleavon Little actually got it. And they were saying, well, no, that was the right call. And I think it was. You know, you wanted Cleavon Little. Richard Pryor was the guy that was going to write your lines for you. Right? And people forget that. But
these are people of the land.
In today's world, there's no way in the world, no way in the world you would get that movie made. Not going to happen.
You could say that PC speaking, Blazing Saddles was a lot worse than Animal House could have ever been.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially with the racial stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We just never.
Yeah.
You wonder how they can replay it today without getting complaints.
And that's what I was wondering when it came up on the queue. Even just being listed on the queue where you rent it, and it's not being, you know, on, it's not on television, right? It's just, it's you're watching it on demand. But even that, being available on demand.
Just being available to anybody.
Right. It probably isn't long-lived, but you know what? I don't know if comedy is either, frankly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, you need a tuning solution? What's new from Bully Dog? Justin Burt from Bully Dog has the details.
So we've got a couple of turbos now. We've got a Stage 1 Detroit turbo for some of the guys out there running the Detroit power plants. It is a stock style, but it's non-wastegated. So you're going to build a little more boost, a little more quick in the RPM range. You're going to make that power a little sooner than you will with stock turbo. We've also got our CAT Stage 1 turbo, which is a 78-millimeter billet unit. And it also comes in a 132 exhaust housing that's been popular for some of our CAT guys, but we've also got this Stage 2 coming. Those should land in the warehouse sometime in the 1st of May and be ready to ship out in the weeks following. So that is also a 78-millimeter billet unit, but it actually has a 145 exhaust housing. So you're going to make a little more power. You're going to make a little less heat. And you're going to use a little bit less boost to make more power. So it's definitely a more efficient unit. We've been working on it for a while. We've listened to some of these guys out here making a little more power than stock, and this is that option for them. So the website, bigrig.bullydog.com. You can check out our Facebook page for applications and announcements for product support, and our Instagram as well.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.